ministry. Okay? That declaration, in a sense, perhaps sealed Jesus' conviction. In other words, it declared to him, as well as to everyone else around, that he indeed was the Son of God. Okay? As he's getting ready to begin that that ministry, he needed to know for sure that he was who he understood himself to be. Okay? If you go back all the way to, again, his childhood, the last episode that we saw Jesus in before he begins his ministry was where? At the temple. Okay? And he was there, you know, discussing with the teachers of the law and so forth. And when his parents found him there, and they expressed their concern, why did you worry us so much? What was his response to them? Yeah, didn't you know I had to be about my Father's business, okay? So, you know, scholars have always, we've always looked at that and said, well, you know, Jesus at the age of 12 years old, because that's what he was at the time, Jesus at that age, you know, already knew, you know, who he was. But again, did he understand at that particular point everything that went along with that? You see? And did he fully understand all of the implications of that? When Jesus now is being baptized by John, and this declaration from the Father is made, okay, that then removes any and all doubt, if there was any. Okay? And it solidifies Jesus, as he begins his ministry, in his complete understanding of not only who he is, but what he is about to do. Okay? So, in other words, you know, as he's getting ready to go, you know, as he accepts this declaration about himself, he accepts who he is, but he also accepts the mission in all of its implications. Okay? And that's significant because where is that mission going to take him? To the cross. See? When we look at the Old Testament, and again, this whole study is from the idea is looking at and getting to know Jesus through the Old Testament. Okay? Well, the Old Testament not only helps us to understand some things, but it also helped Jesus to understand who he was. Now think about that a moment, okay? The Hebrew Scriptures painted a picture of the people, of the prophecies, of the symbols, and all of the other things that made up, you know, the Hebrew life, and all of the expectations that the Hebrews had for their future. In that picture, others saw only a collection of people and events. In other words, the average Jew at the time of Jesus could go back and look at what the Old Testament said, and they were told, you know, this is what it teaches, and the prophecies, and all the different events, things that you and I have studied, you see, all of those different events. And they would look at those things as being, you know, sometimes just a collection of things that showed how God was involved in the lives of the people and so forth. They'd look at the promises, as we've talked about, and the prophecies, looking at and trying to see some kind of application for themselves, very much like people do today, you see, looking at the history and what's going on in the present-day world and go, oh, yep, here it comes, the end of the world is at hand, you see, and this means this and this means that and so on and so forth. And just trying to figure out how their lives are connected to all the different things that the Old Testament Scriptures or the Hebrew Scriptures had to say. So they would see all of this collection of writings, you know, as books of information that might help them to understand perhaps what God is doing and has been doing and so forth. But Jesus, on the other hand, when he looked at the Old Testament Scriptures, He saw his own face. Why? Because those Old Testament scriptures were about him. See? Jesus' self-identity was based on his Father's identification of him. And that identification was based on the Hebrew Scriptures. So when the Father made that declaration, "This is my Son, in whom I am well pleased," that was more than just a declaration of identifying him as going, okay, yeah, he's kind of special, what have you. It was identifying him as the one that the people had been reading about and heard about and taught about through the Old Testament scriptures all of their lives. But more importantly, it helped Jesus to identify himself in the same way, in all of the things that he had been taught from those very same scriptures all of his life. Now think about that a moment. You see, I think that sometimes perhaps we might look at Jesus as being, you know, do you think Jesus ever really sat down and read the Hebrew Scriptures? Well, why did he have to do that for? He knew them all, right? No. No, Jesus had to learn. And those very Scriptures, the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, what we refer to as the Old Testament, Jesus had to learn it and study it and so forth. And now the Father is identifying him, that is Jesus, as his Son, the very one that those Old Testament scriptures that he had studied all his life had been talking about. See? Up until now in our study, we've really been looking for the most part at what others thought of Jesus. The facts that were used by others to attempt to identify Jesus of Nazareth. We looked at the early birth record, what we refer to and many people call the Christmas story. You know, the baby in the manger, the migration from to Egypt, and then from Egypt to Nazareth, where he became the carpenter's son. And that's how he was known. And people had a general question about Jesus, as we've been kind of focusing on, is he or isn't he the one we've been waiting for? Turn over in Matthew chapter 16 for just a moment. As an example, you know, Jesus' ministry by this particular time has been going on for a while. And Jesus is gathered with his disciples. And he asks a very specific question that has to do with this whole impression and this question that we've been focusing on. Matthew chapter 16, beginning in verse 13. Can I get somebody to read that for us? Verse 16. Tom, go ahead.
When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Do you men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" So they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God."
Okay. So you see, there's the question that people still had on their minds. Who is Jesus? Okay? And there were still, by this time, a lot of different ideas about who Jesus really was. Some said he was John the Baptist or one of the prophets, Elijah. You know, there's all these different ideas. Well, where did those ideas come from? What? Yeah, but where did the different people get those ideas from? Why would they think that he was John the Baptist or Elijah or one of the other prophets? Where would they get those ideas from? Yeah, from the Old Testament scriptures. From the Hebrew scriptures they'd been learning and reading and studying, you see. That's where they got it from. But the real question is, who is Jesus? And it's not just a question for the disciples there, but it was a question for Jesus himself. You see, that at the beginning of his ministry, that had to be completely clear to him. Again, up until now, we're looking at this whole situation. What do people say about Jesus? What's their impression of him? But now we turn to Jesus himself, identifying with the pictures that are painted in those Hebrew scriptures of him. Okay? How does Jesus accept this identity with all of its staggering consequences? See? In other words, I think that we tend to read the narratives, and we read Matthew chapter 3 when Jesus was baptized by John, and we look at that and we read those events and we go, cool story. And what do we generally take away from that when we read that that particular narrative? What kind of things do we generally take away from that narrative? You read that narrative, what do you get from it?
Well, you know, one of the things, I guess, is that, you know, Christ, you know, himself submitted to baptism, so anyone who
says,
you know, well, I don't need to do that.
Okay.
That's a pretty good thing, is that, well, you know, even Christ, although he was sinless, told God, you know, let this be to fulfill all righteousness.
Sure. Okay, so we got, you know, yeah, even Jesus got baptized. What else do we take away from it? Not a trick question. It's just basically that we read the narrative and we find certain facts in there. You know what? John the Baptist, the Baptist was baptizing there in Jordan, and people were coming. Jesus came and he got baptized. As you said, you know, John says, "Wait a minute, you should be baptizing me." Jesus said, "No, let's take care of this." That's my narrative, okay? You know, paraphrasing here. And then, you know, there's also what event that happened with it when it happened. The Holy Spirit comes down upon him in the form of a dove, and then we have the declaration that we've been talking about. All of these different events or facts surrounding that particular instance, right? And generally we go, cool story. Tells us about the beginning of Jesus' ministry. That's how he began, because the very next thing we read about is what? Yeah, he goes off into the wilderness where he's tempted by the devil, right? You say, move on to the next story. What do you suppose was happening in Jesus' mind while those particular events were unfolding? You see, what I'm suggesting to you is there's more to the story than what I think we often see. And that is, what is Jesus seeing from those events? What is his understanding from those events? What are they telling him? Do what? It started, yeah. In other words, when you know Jesus is baptized, the Holy Spirit comes down upon him. He is identified as the Son of God by the Father that makes that declaration, "This is my Son." And as I said a few moments ago, that declaration is not just for all the people that are there, you know, seeing this unfold, but for Jesus as well. And what do you suppose begins to set into Jesus' mind at that particular moment? This is where it begins. Mike?
I was just going to say, he knows he's the one.
Yeah. And what does that mean? As I mentioned to you a moment ago, you know, by accepting any of those events and the declaration especially that the Father has made about him, then Jesus has to accept all of it. Okay? Including the cross. For therein is the essence of the man and the mission. And I think that's what Jesus was having to focus on at that moment, right?
Yeah. did it in college when it comes to doing the good in college. But I also like to just think that he was just the responsibility that he had on his shoulders. He knew it, and he was willing to accept it all the way to the cross. And that's with that responsibility he had, he didn't leave any less responsibility on us.
Right.
We have a great responsibility to continue his work. But we must continue
Absolutely.
To do that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You see, it's a matter of, you know, when you look at Jesus at that particular point, and again, keeping in mind, don't miss this, everything that Jesus had learned through the Hebrew Scriptures up to that point in his life. And now it is clearly being identified to him. You see? He's the one that those Scriptures have been talking about. And by accepting that identification, again, Jesus accepts all of what the implications are that go along with that. And it's kind of like, you know, the Apostle Paul talks about obeying the law and keeping the law, you know, those who wanted to do that. And remember he said, if you violate one part of the law, how much of the law do you violate? All of it. You see, it's an all or nothing proposition here. You see, if you're going to accept part of it, you've got to accept all of it. In other words, Jesus, as he accepts the identification of who he really is, you see, in all of its implications, he's understanding, yes, I'm the Son of God, and I've got special powers and so forth, but where is it going to take me? To the cross, you see. And what is the mission here, you see? And it takes Jesus, I think, all the way back to the promise that God made to Abraham that we've been talking about throughout this whole study. What was the mission? Yeah, through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. You see? And so we begin to look at Jesus as he sees himself in all of those things that the Hebrew Scriptures had been prophesying about and talking about and all the things that had been worked to bring him to this particular point. There were three things, or three Old Testament figures, so to speak, or concepts, ideas, that Jesus had to internalize. Okay? As he is looking at this identity as the Son of God, these three things that Jesus, in order to carry out his mission, you see, has to come to terms with and understand it, but he looks at them through the Old Testament. First of all, it is authority. Jesus has the authority of the Davidic king. And that equals sovereignty. Okay? In other words, Jesus saw himself in the identity of the Son of God and the Davidic Messiah. The two cannot be separated. And one who studied the Old Testament Scriptures would understand that. You see? If you are going to be of the line of David, then you are going to be a son. Ted?
We're talking about the identity of Jesus, I understand. And maybe you don't want to go here this way, this time. But think about this. Of course, the Jews of today do not accept Jesus
right.
as the Messiah. They certainly don't accept him as the Son of God.
Right.
But the Jews are really a minority in the world.
Right.
But when we come to Islam, which is not a minority, it's a huge, huge population, they say Jesus is a prophet,
right,
but they don't accept him as the Son of God.
Right.
So I think we need to look at that a little closer. Our basis of accepting this, of course, is John, the apostle, who says Jesus is from the beginning. But in the Old Testament, like Deuteronomy, which is written by Moses, I suppose, it says, to you it was shown that you might know that the Lord himself is God. There is none other besides him.
Right.
So we've got to some way in our society today, because we are facing preaching the gospel to Islam and to the Jews. How do we answer that question that Jesus is indeed God? I would like it from the Old Testament viewpoint, because otherwise in the New Testament we have to accept it on the basis of the apostles, which Islam nor the Jews accept.
Right. Well, and I think that that's why this is so important, because in order for us to help people to understand that, we can tell them all day who we think Jesus is.
Yes.
But what we're looking at here is not what we think Jesus is or who we think Jesus is, but who did Jesus think that he was? Who did he understand himself to be? And what was the basis for that understanding? Well, it was the very Old Testament Hebrew Scriptures that the Jews believed in, you see, and even Muslims, you know, except. So if we can help people to understand through the Old Testament Scriptures how Jesus saw himself, I think then we can make some headway with folks.
Yes.
And so that's what we're trying to do here is, you know, how does Jesus see all of this as coming together? See? So, you know, when Jesus identifies in himself the Son of God and the Davidic Messiah, that's how he saw himself, and what that speaks of is authority, the whole issue of sovereignty. You see, he was the Son of God as declared by the Father at that particular event, but along with that is understood that he was also the Davidic Messiah, the king. You see, in 2 Samuel chapter 7 in verse 14, there, we'll turn over there for just a moment. 2 Samuel 7 and verse 14. Here we find we find the father making a statement concerning the kingdom of David and what's going to happen to this kingdom. David wanted to build a temple for the Lord, but the Lord makes it clear to him that he's not going to be the one that's going to do that. Look at what he says. Beginning in verse 12, when your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring after you, who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. Look at verse 14. I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. Okay? Now, that's an important statement that God is making to David. And who is he making it about?
Jesus.
You see? Now, who was David's son? Solomon. But also, who was David's son? Jesus. You see? Jesus would recognize that. You see, it refers right here specifically to Solomon, but it also refers to Jesus. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 5. And look at what the writer there says. Now keep in mind, the book of Hebrews is written to who? To Hebrews. Okay? They are Hebrew Christians or Jewish Christians. Okay? And he's writing to them to try to help them to understand the implications of Christ from the Old Testament. Okay? So, in other words, those Jews who maybe weren't making the connection here and weren't accepting Christ as the Messiah, the writer of Hebrews is trying to help them understand, look, this is what your Old Testament scriptures were talking about. And look at what he says here in chapter 1, verse 5. For to which of the angels did God ever say, "You are my son, today I have become your father"? Or again, "I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me like a son." It makes a clear connection between the kingship and the sonship of David and that of Christ. And the point is that Jesus, these are the very scriptures, that Old Testament scriptures, that Jesus knew. See? And so Jesus is able, because of those scriptures, to clearly identify himself as being the son of David. And all of the implications that came with that. If you are a son of David, then you are also what? King. Yes, Ted?
Yeah, this seems to be a very reasonable transition and thinking that God has made for himself a son.
Right.
But I still think about this idea of Jesus somehow being with God from the beginning.
Right.
How does that relate to the sonship or the relationship between the Father and whoever Jesus is before he was made a son? Maybe you don't want to get into that right now, but I say that's something that we all have to think about when the question rises. If you speak to a Jew,
right,
this is what rises. If you speak to a Muslim, this is what comes up.
Right.
And why we need to be on firm ground in thinking about it. Is this just a doctrine that
okay.
has risen up somewhere or another? Or is it something that we could really nail as a foundation? I can see how God could choose to have a son.
Right.
But then the relationship before that is puzzling to me sometimes, because Christ being with God from the beginning and
okay.
being a creator and being with God.
Well, I'm glad that you asked that question. Again, keep in mind that what we're looking at here is how Jesus is understanding himself through what the Old Testament taught, okay? And if you go, look over in Luke chapter 20, beginning in verse 41. And if you have an extra finger, then you might want to turn to Psalm 110 and verse 1. Luke chapter 20. Beginning in verse 41 through 44. Can I get somebody to read that for us, please? Keep going down to verse 43. Okay. in Psalm 110 in verse 1 is when David makes this statement that Jesus is quoting right here. Okay? This was before we get to the narrative, the birth narratives and the Christmas story that we read about in the New Testament, right? But already David is pointing out the existence of who? Jesus as what?
Lord.
Okay? Jesus as Lord. And so what's happening here is David called him Lord. Okay? Yet the genealogies that we looked at as we began this study that Matthew gives to us clearly identify him as David's son, do they not? Or his heir. Okay? In other words, the purpose as we saw those genealogies were to be able to show and to prove that Jesus was of the lineage of David. So therefore, he was qualified to be king. Right? Okay? Yes, exactly. And he identifies him as David's son, his heir. That's what those genealogies do. But David declared him here, as he says, the Lord, that is the Father, said to my Lord, that is the Son, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies your footstool. So when did Jesus sit at the right hand of the Father? When was he recognized as that? Well, he was recognized that at least by David. We go back and you look at some of the texts that we've studied in other of our studies when, you know, there were three men that appeared to Abraham to tell him about the fulfillment of the promise that God had made to him. And by all understanding and implication of those stories, the one man who stayed there and discussed with Abraham the destruction of the city was Jesus. So, you know, we see him in this way. But more importantly, it's not what we see. It's what Jesus is seeing from these things about himself. What is his understanding of these things? And so he understands from those Old Testament scriptures his descendancy, where he is from, that what that implies is and what that tells him is that he is of the line of David, and that he is to be the king. And he has all the authority and the sovereignty that goes along with that. The second of those three figures that he internalizes is obedience. Obedience was the framework of David's throne. Okay? If you stop and think about it. Why was Saul rejected as king? Because of disobedience. Exactly. You see? 1 Samuel chapter 15, 19 through 24. Saul was told to go and to utterly destroy the Amalekites, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. And upon his return, God had sent Samuel to approach Saul and to confront him with what he had done. And what was God's statement? I have repented that I made Saul king. Okay? Somebody turn over to 1 Samuel 15 and read specifically the statement that is made here concerning this. 1 Samuel 15, beginning in verse 19 and down through 24. Who's got that? Net?
Thank you.
so God removed Saul from the kingship and replaced him with David, who was known as a man after God's own heart. Okay? And his kingdom was built on obedience to God's will. Okay? And Jesus saw obedience as his very sustenance. Okay? John chapter 4, there, after Jesus has had a conversation with the woman at the well, his disciples come back to him, and Jesus says to them, they're trying to get him to eat something. He says, "My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work." And so Jesus sees again within himself, tied to those Old Testament scriptures, the importance and the significance of obedience. Though David was king, David constantly, continually referred to himself as God's servant. And Jesus saw himself as the servant's son and king. This is how Jesus would identify himself, would identify with those Old Testament scriptures that told of himself. And then the third one is sacrifices. We finish up. We've got about a minute left. Sacrifice was linked to Jesus by that very obedience. See how all three of these things are connected. And Jesus saw them to himself. Abraham obeyed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. He obeyed God when he offered his only son, Isaac, as a sacrifice. Genesis chapter 22. You remember the words that God said to Abraham when he stopped him from taking his son's life there on the mountain. "Now I know that you have not withheld your only son from me." John the Baptist identified Jesus with that very same event when he looked upon Jesus and said, "Behold, the sacrificial lamb of God's providing." John chapter 1 and verse 29. Jesus identified himself in Matthew chapter 20, verses 18 and 19, as one who would be handed over to the Jewish authorities to be mocked and flogged and crucified. So he would be obedient even unto death. Death on the cross. So you see how those three key figures in the Old Testament that Jesus identified with as he began his ministry, you say, the mission that God the Father sent him to do, he would identify with all three of those things, that indeed he was to be the King of the Jews. But in doing that, he would be an obedient servant, obedient even unto death on the cross. And there was Jesus' identity in his mission. Not just who he was, but what he was to do. All right? Okay, we're out of time. That's what we have for today. We will continue with this next week. Thank you all very much.